This is an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Julian Scheer is back on the program. He's an award-winning investigative journalist and veteran TV documentary writer and director. He has a new book out called The North Star, Canada and the Civil War Plots Against Lincoln. It chronicles the role Canada played on both sides of the war between the states. He joins us once again via Zoom from right here in Montreal to talk about it. Hi, Julian.
Hey, Peter. Always great to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you, too. And this is a fascinating story because I think a lot of Canadians and, well, a lot of people, Canadians and Americans, aren't aware of what kind of role, if any, that Canada played in the U.S. Civil War. I mean, at that time, it was just a few years before we ourselves were a country. As I mentioned in the introduction, played a role on both sides. And I'm just wondering, since we were, again, not even a country at that moment, was there an official determination as to which side we were on and who was on the North and who was on the South?
Well, Canada was going to become Canada in 1867. We were a colony of Britain, and the British Empire declared neutrality during the Civil War. And that infuriated Lincoln's government because, in effect, it was saying, well, the slave-owning Confederates and the government in Washington, you're kind of both equal and we'll stay neutral. What that meant is Canada became a haven for the Southern Confederates because they're fighting a vicious war against the North. They obviously, it was dangerous for them to even be in the North, but Confederate soldiers, Confederate agents, Confederate mercenaries, and Confederate politicians could live comfortably, plot, and plan anything they wanted in Toronto and in Montreal, and that's what they did. Montreal became a kind of Casablanca during the war, right? Just filled with spies and soldiers. And I document in the North Star how our leading bankers, our leading politicians, and our leading newspapers supported the South, supported the slave South, while many ordinary people signed up for the war to fight on Lincoln's side.
Was there, or could you quantify any kind of percentage as to the percentage of Canada or the then nascent colonies had toward the South as opposed to the North?
You can, in the sense that when it came to ordinary people, literally bodies fighting, there were tens of thousands of ordinary Canadians who fought in the Civil War overwhelmingly on the Northern side, both because of political sympathies and it was easier to join the North because it was closer. But when it came to the establishment, most newspapers, for example, all the newspapers in Montreal, all the French papers except one, and all the English papers, especially the Montreal Gazette, except one, were ferociously anti-Lincoln. And the same in Ontario, what was then called, you know, Canada West. Only the Globe stood out as a voice for abolition and a voice against the slave South. So newspapers overwhelmingly on the side of the South. The Church, the Catholic Church in English Canada and in French Canada, its leaders were on the tended to sympathize with the South. And in Quebec, they organized a kind of rat line to hide one of the main accomplices used in Lincoln's assassination. And same with the political leaders, John A. Macdonald, the leading politician at the time, the man who 2 years after the Civil War would become the father of Confederation, father of our country. He made a speech in 1864 during one of the Confederation talks, right? We're planning to build a country. And he makes a speech where he hails the bravery of the Southern fighters and how brave they've been, even though they've been outnumbered. And think about this. This is 1864, 3 years into the war, when it's clear it has become a war about slavery. So I think the numbers are pretty clear. The elites in Canada were largely on the side of the South. Many ordinary people were on the side of the North.
Well, what was it about the Southern side of the battle that seemed to be appealing to many Canadians?
Well, I think, and again, I would say many Canadian members of the establishment, I think ordinary people, and obviously Black Canadians. We had a growing population of Black Canadians made up of both people who were born here and many American Blacks who had come here either as free men and women or as escaped slaves. They were on the side of the North. But for the establishment, look, they were closely tied to Britain. Britain, 80% of Britain's cotton came from the South. Britain was making huge amount of money opening up its shipyards to repairing and working on the Southern Navy. Southern businesses were trading on the London Stock Exchange. And I think there was a political sympathy. There was much more sympathy among the conservative Canadian aristocratic leaders to the Southern aristocracy. They were their kind of people, right? A very driven system, very privileged. Lincoln was seen, you know, as a bit of a too much of a Democrat, too much of a populist. And to be fair, Lincoln's government contained members and politicians who were openly annexation, right? Who openly called for Canada to become part of the United States. So all those reasons led the elites to support themselves. But you know what's important, I think, Peter, is that it's not just the political support. I mean, anybody's free to say anything they want in a war or not. What it meant is that Canada didn't just give vocal support. It became a base for what today we would call terrorism. You know, what I talk about in the book is there was an attempt by Confederates who were being paid and operated in Canada to go to New York and conduct an arson attack. They tried to set fire to 19 hotels. Smoke was billowing out. Millions was caused in damage because of an error they made in the way they planned the fires. Luckily, nobody died, but it was denounced in the papers at the time as a terror attack coming from Canada. Confederate soldiers raided a town in Vermont just across the border, stole $250,000, which would be multi-million dollars today, killed an innocent bystander. They said openly they did it in the name of the Confederates. They escaped back to Canada. They're arrested, put on trial in Montreal, 1864 in the fall. The judge acquits them on a technicality, which enrages the Americans and even Canadian judicial authorities. And here's the kicker. The Montreal police chief, as I document, becomes exposed because he meets secretly with Confederate agents, arranges to keep the stolen money that was seized at a bank that was doing a lot of money laundering for Confederates. And right after the raiders are acquitted, just before they're going to be rearrested, they go to the bank and in effect steal the money the second time. So that enraged Lincoln and the Northern forces. So that's the kind of consequences for Canada's political endorsement of the slave South.
Canada and the United States are such good friends and have been for such a very long time. But I'm just wondering, yep, was there any repercussion when the North finally won and the elites in Canada, as you say, some of them supported the South? Was there any repercussion towards Canada?
There were repercussions even sooner than that. Lincoln's, after the scandal I just mentioned about the terror raid in Vermont, Lincoln makes a State of the Union address in late 1864. Nobody knew at the time, of course, it would be his last State of the Union address. And he threatens to rip up trade agreements, military agreements, and he does impose passports between Canada and the U.S. So there was a definite chill in the relation. Now, that being said, after Lincoln is assassinated, most of the political leaders, you know, obviously express their condolences. But surprisingly, if you were living in Toronto or Montreal on the weekend of April 15th, 16th, 17th, right after Lincoln is assassinated, many of the newspapers you would be reading condemned Lincoln, said he had it coming. Newspapers in Canada called him a mad, blood-stained despot. They said that there was some just cause to what John Wilkes Booth had done. You know, it's important to realize the depth of our involvement. Let me give you a shining example of that. John Wilkes Booth, famous actor, frankly, like kind of the Brad Pitt of the Civil War, right? He was a handsome, well-loved actor, strong supporter of the South, hated Lincoln. He comes to Montreal. Why? Because it's a Confederate hangout in October. Spends 2 weeks here, stays at the fanciest hotel in town, which is a known Confederate hangout. Dozens of Confederates are always there, prominent men, businessmen. He's playing cards with some of the leading Confederate agents. He gets the names of two people who are part of the Confederate network in Maryland and Virginia. That'll help him escape and he kills Lincoln. Just before he leaves, he plays billiards in one of the most popular bars in Montreal called Dooley's Bar. And in words that would later become important, the election is coming, Lincoln's second election. And he tells his billiard partner, who happened to be the Quebec pool champion, and named Joseph Dionne. He tells Dionne, doesn't matter what's going to happen in the election, Booth says, Abe's contract is up, his goose is cooked. And of course, 5 months later, we know what Booth would do. So, you know, I think Canada literally had blood on our hands. And it's important when we look at the past, we don't only look at the things we did. We were the terminus for the Underground Railroad. We had abolished slavery. Blacks who were escaping slavery, if they made it to Canada, they were free. So we had a very important role. But I think it's important to look at the dark side of our history.
It is an important place to look. What led you to looking in this direction in the first place?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up in Montreal, spent almost my entire life in Montreal. And I remember back in the day when I was studying history at McGill, I would walk downtown and on the west side of the Bay building, the Bay department store on Union Street, there was a plaque to Jefferson Davis, the head of the Confederacy. And I remember thinking, you know, why is there a plaque to the leader of the slave South in Montreal? Why is it still here? Well, it turns out that Jefferson Davis, after the war, he serves some time in jail. And then when he gets bail, he doesn't go to Mississippi or Memphis. He goes straight to Montreal because that's where his family is. And that's where a lot of Confederate soldiers are. He'll spend a year in Canada being cheered by crowds. He'll be given a house and he stays temporarily in the home of a prominent publisher whose house was standing where the Bay department store was built. So, you know, uncovering that kind of dark history. Look, you know, I'm known for my books on the Hells Angels, on child abuse, on wrongful convictions. And I think this is just part of the same story, looking under those, you know, dark rocks in our society and trying to point to some uncomfortable truths.
Well, again, it's a fascinating story. The book is called The North Star, Canada and the Civil War Plots Against Lincoln. Julian, you do some amazing work, and this is yet another one. Congratulations on the release of this book, and thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Oh, thanks for the time, and I hope people enjoy it. You know, I tried to make it read like a political thriller. You get to meet all these people, and I think you'll feel as if they're talking to you directly from their memoirs and their letters. So it's you know, we have a great history. Let's not ignore it. Let's learn the lessons.
Julian Scheer, author of The North Star, Canada and the Civil War Plots Against Lincoln. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0715. And you'll find the link to Julian's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You've just heard an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. To hear any or all of the full hour-long shows, visit thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com. A presentation of Flying Fish Communications.